wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake. We have a slightly different show this week in that we have a whole... I feel like this is a cleaning out the cupboard show where we have all kinds of little stories that probably don't deserve all, you know, all kinds of attention. But there's still stories that, you know, again...
We've had, you know, we're always emailing each other and coming up with things and a lot of stuff at the last minute. Fair warning, this is not one of our in-depth researched versions because everything's going to be quick.
Everything's going to be quick, but it's all going to be relevant. And but I did want to start with, you know, you and I have often talked, and it's, to be fair, right, it's probably been your idea about how we need to do more obituaries, but we've sort of bandied that topic around and we end up just mentioning that one day we will do an obituary feature.
Yeah, whenever we run out of ideas on this one, we'll just do straight obituaries for the next 20 years. But because people keep dying.
Yes, well they do, yes. It's just death and taxes are the constants. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't a notable obituary or a notable death this past week or past couple of weeks when you hear this show. And I only say that because it was quite pertinent to me.
Yeah, I was going to say. Notable, you know, to me, but also
when I talk about it, it's notable to the fact that you and I consistently now for about 7 to 8 years, 8 years, I think, you know, a couple of times a month, sit in front of microphones and put stuff up on the air. And this is this right. What I'm about to talk about sort of begins to frame my relationship with just that whole being on the microphone. Mm-hmm. So a chap died this week. His name was Nicholas Parsons. Mm-hmm. And he was a sort of British TV host. And he passed away this week. I think he was 94 or 95. And he is known to most people. He was the host of a long-running BBC radio show that has been on air since 1967 called Just a Minute.
Was it on still?
Yeah, it was still on until he passed away. And I know that they've had a TV version that I think Graham Norton, who's a sort of a TV, you know, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel type, you know, he has a talk show.
Yeah, yeah. I think people have seen that because this usually he's a little bit zany, right? So, like, he's like so overly energetic.
Like I said, it's an idea that's lasted forever. And in fact, why don't I just go ahead...
Is he Sir Nicholas Parsons, by the way? I see CBE on his bio.
Yeah, Commander of the British Empire. I would imagine, it doesn't say on his Wikipedia page if he's Sir. Mm-hmm. But anyway, let me play this, and if you know who he is.
Welcome to Just a Minute.
And I will actually let him introduce the show and explain the show.
Is it Just a Minute?
Yeah.
And as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country, but throughout the world, but to welcome to the program this week four exciting, talented, and exuberant players of this fame. And they are seated on my left, Ross Noble and Tony Hawks, and seated on my right, Paul Merton and Sheena Hancock. Please welcome all four of them.
If it turns out this is illegible, you can just cut the clip in.
Yeah, I'll cut the clip in. Yeah, don't worry about that.
So I'm going to ask them to speak if they can.
Illegible.
The subject that I will give them, and they will try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviation. Beside me sits Sarah Sharp. She's going to help me with the score. She'll blow a whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the Radio Theatre in the heart of that magnificent edifice, which is called Broadcasting House. And we're going to begin the show this week with Ross Noble. Women in comedy is the subject.
Ooh, sensitive.
So let me stop there for a moment. So every week, and this is basically a panel show where guests come on, and it is under the guise of a game show, right, but ultimately it's comedians and celebrities, and they're trying to be entertaining for half an hour. So it's very similar to here in the US, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which is ultimately a news quiz, but an excuse to get comedians and celebrities on to try and be funny. Mm-hmm. And the whole point of the show was, it's a game show where Nicholas Parsons was the host, and he would give... You know, if you were one of the guests, he would say, Eric Edmondson, you have 1 minute to speak on pool tables. And so you have to just off the cuff talk for 1 minute about pool tables. And if, you know, one of the other guests decides that you have repeated yourself or deviated off the topic or paused, you would buzz in. And if Nicholas Parsons thought that it was a legitimate challenge, you'd get a point. and then you would take over the topic. And obviously, if you start repeating what, if I buzzed in and started repeating what you'd said about pool tables, then someone else would buzz in and go, I'm guilty of repetition.
So this show isn't a minute long, it's a minute.
No, each topic is a minute. And the whole point is you want to be talking at the end of the minute.
That sounds interesting.
And it is, it's a lot of fun. And I'm going to tell a super geeky story about myself.
Couldn't possibly be.
I remember all through, like, being a kid and being a teenager, if you're standing around at recess, because I was sort of semi in the nerd herd when we weren't kicking stones at stuff, we would stand around and play Just the Minute. Because it's a game. You don't, it's like charades. You don't, I mean, it's a fabulous, you know, if you have everyone over. So we'd be like, you know, so if you said to me, you know, Zeph, you have 1 minute to talk about pool tables. And I would sit there and I would go, you know, the pool table is covered with baize, which is a felt material. See, I said there, and if you were savvy, you would horn in and go up, hesitation, and then you would take over the topic. Yeah. But of course, like any of these panel shows, it's about comedians, you know, being funny, and it tended to be the same sort. So this show had been on.
They have that late night. What was it on MTV or Comedy Central? That late night show with the three
remote
comedians.
Control.
No. More recently, it was
gosh,
the one with
I don't
the
know. Who watches
one
MTV
that guy
more
who
recently?
Does that like he does the After Hours Walking Dead show too.
I don't know.
In some sort of trouble. But
I didn't know MTV was still available.
It was not nearly as serious as that, but it was a similar sort of like just getting each other's way, make jokes, and then like at the end of the round, he'd be like, I give you 100 points, I give you 12 points, and you get 10 negative points or something like
so
that.
So Nicholas Parsons had been the radio host from when the show started in 66 until he did his last show apparently back in just last September.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was in his 90s, and he was a famous BBC voice. He also did some other work on the side. He hosted for a little while the British version of Sale of the Century. I don't know if people remember that game show on TV. But he was known as the host of Just a Minute.
Before he got into this.
Yeah, originally.
Like he did a theater actor.
He did some voiceover work and stuff like that. But he made his name as the host of Just a Minute. And like I say, this format has been running, and it still runs now, for 50 years.
But can I tell one more? Do we have a timer running on this one?
No, no, because this was the instruction, because then I'm going to say what we're going to do for the rest of it. Can I actually give one more reason why, A, he's sort of like a radio hero of mine.
Sure.
But then in reading his Wikipedia page, I recently discovered that he and I have the same life experience. So it says on his Wikipedia page that he is actually left-handed. But when he was a kid, he was forced to learn to write with his right hand because that's what they did in schools back in Britain, and that's the same thing happened to me when I was a kid because I'm left-handed.
So you both like they'll cut up your brain when you die, and it'll turn out it both
has
like
messed
some
up.
Weird messed up wiring.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Left,
and I remember,
right,
and now to tell one more story of my youth, when I was a little kid and my grandma would come to pick me up from primary school, I would be crying because I was confused. Because I couldn't write, and I couldn't understand why the other kids were all writing, and I just couldn't do it, and I couldn't understand why I couldn't do it. And as it turned out, it was because the teachers would make everyone write with their right hand, but I was left-handed.
You know, I'd sort of let that sort of washed over me when you first told it. That is bonkers. Like, they did that generally to children in Britain?
Let me just read straight from
no, Nicholas. No, but that's – he's old, right? So, like – but you're telling me –
this was still happening
in
the 70s.
They force you
Parsons,
to
– Parsons was born left-handed but was made to write with his right hand.
I get that. But I'm saying in the 70s, they wouldn't let you write with your left hand?
No.
Why? What was the logic?
I don't know. Because that's how these teachers were trained. Because the state of modern education is awful.
Probably some deep root, like, you know, once upon a time they thought left-handedness was like the work of the devil. So, and this is like leftover religious element or something.
Right, so I'm gonna hit you with two things, because I guess I should take the first topic, because this would segue neatly into Brexit, which is going to be our first topic.
I was going to say it was probably we're going.
But in the spirit of Just a Minute,
we're going to do clocks,
5 minutes for topic. I'm going to have a timer here, and then as soon as the timer beeps, we'll hit the bell and we've got to move on to see if we can get our points out and our discussions done in 5 minutes.
Okay.
But obviously, this is, you know, writing with your wrong hand is probably some leftover from Brexit, which of course happened just yesterday as this show is recorded.
Yeah. You're officially Brexited, although it's like kind of bogus. It basically means they gave up all the voting, but none of the actual decisions, like everything's going to be the same until you strike a new deal, which is like what they got 11 months to do that or they something claim. They said, but it's just going to go on forever. Seriously.
He says it's not. He says we'll be done in 11 months, he being the prime minister.
Yeah.
And if not, we will just trade on World Trade Organization rules. But Britain are finally out after years of wrangling.
I saw the count of days. It's like 1,400 days. So I guess it's been 4 or 5 years since the vote.
4 years, yeah. Three and a half years. And I'm one of those people who tend to fall in the camp of this is a act of national self-harm. But of course, I don't live in Britain anymore. So anyone back in Britain is listening who's probably a Leaver is going, shut up, you're foreigner, you don't know what you're talking about.
The only thing I care is how it's going to affect the Premier League.
Well, it is. And no one's actually thought half of this stuff through.
Yeah. But the labor is going to be more restrictive to come in there. So maybe the teams get worse. Also, like generally, commerce with those teams is going to get a little bit harder.
Well, remember before there was free movement of players, and this isn't that old. This is only like 16 years old. If a club wanted to buy a foreign player, they had to prove that the player met, and there was a whole variety of standards, like had he played for the national team a certain number of times, mm-hmm. or there are all kinds of other sort of criteria to prove, you know, in a strange way, you know, in sort of an immigration sense, is this person worthy of playing in our league, or is he just going to show up and be a freeloader of a hack outside defender? Right. Do you know what I mean? So there were all these sort of bars that had to be crossed for players. But I would imagine now, I mean, this is going to kick in at least for European players who technically, I think if you buy a player from South America, from outside Europe, I think there is still some level of, has he played for Brazil 5 times, or, you know, was he on the Brazilian youth team, or, you know, was he a star at a top level club? There was those sort of benchmarks had to be met, but a European player could just move around because professional football is no different than being a plumber. Right. You just move around.
Yeah.
But apparently now after Brexit,
I was wondering, you know, of course, there's been this talk of the top
perhaps if
teams.
A professional footballer is also a plumber, that might help his immigration status. I don't know.
Well, you know, in America, when you're coming in, what you usually have to show is that the talent that you're bringing in, whatever skills bring in, are not readily accessible in the market from labor locally. So, like, if you could really finesse that on soccer, like, it's who has what particular skill set, you know.
Well, I mean, I don't want to be – when I was a kid, England were pretty terrible. I don't think it was too hard to prove that you were better than any of the English players. Do you know what I mean? But again, I remember being a kid and going to the Arsenal, and when a foreign player was signed, even if you'd never heard of the dude, it was the most exotic thing. And, foreign player has shown, he must be really good. Because in a strange way, he was really good, because Joe Blow, foreign player who just thumps it around like your homegrown defender, well, he couldn't get in.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'd imagine we will return to those days of mediocre football and a bad international team. I mean,
what I was about to say is, you know, there's been this talk about the top teams going into a European league and almost like splitting out, like top teams all around Europe.
Yes.
And I did kind of wonder, would like teams that are making so much money there, when forced with this, would they almost repatriate to like become European teams and somehow like split themselves away from being British?
I think that's there, but I also don't want to be super dweeby about the nature of it. I mean, obviously, taxation is now going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm a foreign player, I have to sit there and make a value judgment. Am I better off going there?
You hear more and more about American players picking what places they're going to play on pro teams in America based on state taxes. Like you pick a state that's got a low tax rate, New Hampshire, but they don't have any pro teams.
I imagine it's going to be the same. Yeah. So anyway,
is your timer working? Because I feel like we've eclipsed our 5 minutes.
Hold on, I'm looking. No, it's 33 seconds left.
Wow, we're ahead of the game.
Let's move on.
All right.
So that's Brexit.
So speaking of British things, and also New Year's resolutions, as people who listen regularly know, my New Year's resolution is to row 1,000,000 meters.
I said 1,000,000 miles in the green room.
I think you actually said that was 1,000 miles. It was some sort of weird number. It adds up to being 680 something miles or something like that.
An impressive feat nonetheless.
I guess so. But in any event, it's really just more of a task of consistency of yes. actually consistently rowing. It's not so much that this is some amazing number. It doesn't make me some sort of marathoner or something like, well, but I'm just saying you achieve it by regularly rowing for half an hour, like 50% of the days.
Still.
You know, so that's fine.
Don't undercut
in the course of
own.
Looking for different things to do. Now, technically, this doesn't help me as much with the meters because it's mixed exercises, but I found a British rowing YouTube channel.
Okay.
Or a site or whatever it is, because it actually has parts that are about watching the rowing team, the national rowing team and the clubs and things and in Britain, and you can watch, you know, videos of rowing if that's your kind of thing to do. But it has a set of videos that are rowing exercises, meaning on an erg machine. But obviously,
okay.
discussing this on an indoor rowing machine, the concept too is the normal one with the fan you see in the gym
yep.
and everybody going on there. So they have a bunch of workouts, and they're
this is completely different from what I envisioned, and I'm going to tell you what I envisioned in a moment. Yes.
So you tear it up on YouTube, and like a bunch of them are just really 20-minute workouts. I've only done this one workout twice, and it's 30 minutes. And what they do is they're breaking it up. Like, okay, they have a person on screen who's got a couple other people in the room, like all rowing, and saying, okay, we're going to do this part, 4 minutes of warm up.
So they're instructing
you. Now take
you.
A break.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're going to do high pace. We're going to do intervals. And then they do some stuff that's
like
off of the rowing
class.
Machine. Yeah, kind of.
Like, I mean,
but it's designed.
Push it
it's designed to be a rowing exercise as well. It's not like just a fitness class. Because it's rowing focused.
No, but what I mean is there's a dude instructing.
Yeah, woman, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just don't only be, you know, don't so, assume no, too no. much. But like then you get off and you do a bunch of like ab crunches and push-ups.
Oh, so it's
and,
not just being
or as they
on,
say in England, as I heard, press-ups.
Yes,
I guess that's
that's
that
what
one.
It was.
Push-up
yes,
is a press-up in England. Lunges and things like that. And then you get back on the machine.
Oh,
and
wow.
And there's a bunch of, like one of them is, you know, go 100 meters as fast as you can. And then you rest out the rest of a minute. So the faster you go, the more little rest you get. And then you do it again in a minute, do it again in a minute, like five or six.
So it's
times.
A whole workout. It's not just
yeah, half an hour continuous of this stuff, of different things getting on and off. And the reason I say it's not ideal for my task is you actually in that half an hour only end up with like a little more than half of the meters you'd get just by rowing for half an hour.
Okay.
So it doesn't exactly hit the meters, but I thought it would be a good variety of getting some meters while also doing some different exercises.
It's not very realistic, though, is it? If it's not very realistic, if you're rowing in your boat, you're not going to get out into the water. You'll sink.
I don't want to be facetious. Can I say this? So
when you said to me,
when
you said to me you'd seen a rowing video, and I know I've just said this example of the spin class and the instructor with his headset telling you to do this and do that. Well, I know they have those. I mean, in the end of the day, it's an indoor bike. Those Peloton machines that have the screen.
And they now have a treadmill. Peloton has a treadmill.
Yeah, and you can.
It's like got a great review, but it's $5,000 for a Peloton. And then you have to pay like, I forget, $30 a month to have like the access to all the
videos. I've got a fixie that I built for $25. Exactly. So, I mean, again, I'm kind of old school about this. If you want to ride your bike, get out on a bike and ride. Don't do this sitting in your house.
Well, I think it's okay to exercise indoors because it makes it a lot easier.
When you sell one of those bikes, you can have a screen where you're riding. Do you know what I mean?
Well, the Peloton does do that. Peloton is like a workout class. I mean, maybe they
have
that
there
stuff.
Is ones where the There's bikes the, have a screen and it's like a video game that you can imagine you're riding this and riding that. And when you said to me I was doing a rowing video, for some reason I imagine you were looking at a screen of like water.
Well, it'd be the lame set because, of course, when you row, you're going backwards. And so I'm just going to look at the water behind me. That'd be very disappointing.
Well, still the view, isn't it?
No, it's like a workout, like a CrossFitting kind of workout.
Okay.
Somebody told me, I haven't done Orange Theory, but Orange Theory is one of these gyms where it's all designed about putting your heart rate in this orange zone for
really?
A sustained period of time.
Anyway, it's
a mixture of rowing, treadmill, weight work, you know. I forget what the right word is for like exercises where you just use your – you don't have a weight. You don't have a device. It's obviously an isometric –
body weight.
But there's some sort of like a scientific word, you know?
Because they do, there actually is near me a studio where you just use the rowing machine.
Yeah, okay.
I can't remember what that's
There
called.
Is, yes, there's some rowing thing. It's new to Northern Virginia.
There's quite a few in this area, yeah.
I'm sure they get you off the machine. I mean, like, why would people bother just going to a place to make you row?
It is one of those. Now, I've just said to the people who do the Peloton and the spinning, just buy a bike and go out. Sorry. I guess I'm done. That's it.
Yeah, you're done.
Done. Sorry.
So speaking of, you know, you mentioned some things.
On another show, you can tweet us and go, what was your point? So, because it's too late. So let's move on.
So speaking of, you mentioned earlier, well, no, we're going to go here a different direction.
You've
got to restart this stuff. So speaking of New Year's resolutions,
yes.
We'll be hosting the Super Bowl in the just through the door from the studio here. Yeah. And you'll be over, and other parts of our original family night crew will be over this is all origins of the Olympics and things like that.
Right, that's right.
Going way back in our history. But I'll be, 1 year my resolution was to make more smoked meats, and I'll be making a barbecue pork.
I'm very excited when you said that you were making barbecue pork.
Yeah, so, but doesn't
because
mean,
again, I'm going to criticize, this was a great resolution, but I'm going to critique the fact that I've had in the years since you've had a smoker, I've had about a total of 4 mouthfuls, and 2 of those were on the show.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it.
Do you remember? So I'm going back through my recipe book.
Yes.
And it has, like, each time you do this stuff, you kind of take some notes to figure out, okay, how long did it cook for and the like. Well, I was looking at one from 4th of July a few years ago in which I made 2. Count them,
that's right,
two
and I didn't show
cuts,
up. Yeah,
and so, you and your family did not show up. And therefore, I had pork to last for a month.
I'm going
to
be here tomorrow.
I started putting in scrambled eggs and started doing all this other stuff.
I'm
going to
be porking back on the pork. So you just said, you know, you've got like different recipe books, but I thought part of the secret of smoking was you didn't have to worry too much about the time.
As long as you
cross like the minimum threshold.
Well,
I thought the whole point was low and slow. And yeah, slow meaning, take as long as you like.
Well, the problem is you won't
like
eat anything. So this, when I was looking back, one time I did it in the very cold weather, about the same type of thing that I do now, and it took about 12 hours.
Well, you better get started.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's tomorrow and then that time we eat at 7 o'clock or something like that. So it worked out fine. But for the Super Bowl, the Super Bowl starts at a certain time. It doesn't wait for you. So
no.
I'm going to have to get up early.
You got to get cracking.
Tomorrow, start it up and get going. So this evening, I'm going to set up all the coals and everything. And so I just have to go out there in the morning,
and
light it, get everything going.
Press
and
go.
Get thing on there. Got to, you know, put all the rub on it ahead of time. And so hopefully, you know, get started pretty quickly. But,
because
the weather is better, it's going
to Did you get your pork butt? Did you have to go to a butcher
store,
or can you just get it from
pork,
like the
pork
store?
Butt's not particularly.
It's not.
Like a brisket, like beef brisket might be a little bit, okay, I want to make sure I get it from a butcher.
Cause you just went to the supermarket.
But the supermarket. Because it's the same meat that I think people use for like stews and like other kind of slow cooker type stuff.
Okay.
I mean, it's only like $2 a pound for.
Oh, really?
But yeah, it's ridiculously cheap. So that's all I got for them.
All right, so let's move on. Yeah, I mean, no one says you have to take the full 5 minutes.
But where it was going to go.
Just a minute, you do. Oh, no, so this is the same topic then.
What's that?
Oh, I've stopped the watch. Is this the same topic?
No, all right, let's move on. But where I was about to go was because you mentioned this thing about being a bit of a geek.
Yes.
And I was thinking to myself this week, because there's a new show out about, you have talked, when we've ever talked about Star Wars and Star Trek, or even if we haven't, you've talked about being more of a Trekkie, you know, a Star Trek person.
No, I think I've always, I think I've always said I lean Trekkie.
Yeah.
Because again, and you've heard me say this many, many times, I'm all in on James Bond. So I'm a Bond fan.
Yeah.
But everything else, because I'm already the fan of one thing, and you know me, I'm quite specific. Like, for example, you know, we've had discussions about sports and teams and fans. And my belief is you can root for one team, and then you can root against a whole load of other people. And then situationally, you can go, I would like them to win.
Yeah,
so, in comparison with popular culture, I'm a James Bond fan.
Right. That's your arsenal.
Yeah. Whereas Star Trek, I want them to win that game. But I'm not a Trek fan. I'm a James Bond fan.
What, you want them to win the game against Star Wars, you mean? Or you want
against
them
anyone. I'm just, don't butcher the example. What I'm saying is I lean Trekkie, but I'm not older. Like, I'm not going to get geeked up. Star Trek, James Bond can upset me if it doesn't meet my expectations. Star Trek, I'm just going to go, that was rubbish, and it's not going to bother me.
So I have 2 questions for you, really, then. They're kind of interrelated, but I'll just throw them both out there so you can follow us.
Okay.
Either one. So there's the new show coming, Star Trek Picard.
Yes.
And the gist of it, what we've heard about, first of all, it's on that CBS All Access thing that Star Trek series is on. Like, there's a Star Trek series that's
Star
on
Trek
right
Discovery.
Now. Discovery. Right. Is on there, too. So you have to pay, even if you have CBS, you have to pay extra to get this CBS All Access thing, which I already know that means you're not going to watch it.
Unfortunately,
because
yes.
it won't be there. I'm not going to watch it because I'm not going to pay for CBS.
But I'm not going to lie. Oh, I'm sorry. Finish your question.
But putting that aside, the talk has been that it's almost not in space. It's like about Picard.
Yes.
As a
retired
on. I mean, I imagine he's going to get involved.
He
in space.
He does go to like, space, but it's more about he's
like
post-
on a vineyard with his brother and his family
not,
or something.
It's not set on a ship going through space, which tends to be the standard Star Trek sort of, hey, these are the parameters for the show. And that, you know, CBS, the other one you talked about, the first one they did was Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
They're on the ship, the Discovery.
Yeah, right.
Right. I mean, that's Star Trek.
First question for you, at least the two. One question is, does this intrigue you? And the second question is, which ones, because it made me think as a Star Trek person, which Star Trek series did you actually watch with
Next
any
Generation.
Regularity?
Let me just, Next Generation. I've seen all the Next Generation. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
The first Star Trek, yeah, it's great.
Next Generation, for people who don't know, being where Picard was from. It was the first time they rebooted it.
And yeah, you know, I'm sorry, William Shatner dweebs.
Yeah.
Picard's the greatest captain of them all.
I mean, this is true.
You know?
I mean, I get the fact that once upon a time, I guess that's maybe people below. Plus, you know, Star Trek's the original. And certainly
plus
it was
William
innovative.
Shatner's Canadian. But, I mean, seriously? What the heck is that?
But artistically, I mean, you know, not that these are high art, but certainly Star Trek Enterprise, which is where Picard came from originally. Oh, Next Generation.
No, Next Generation really did sort of.
Was really.
Was the first time that they tried to sort
thoughtful.
Of mine, yes, some proper sort of science, traditional science.
Oh, and also
fiction.
Like the allegories to current things.
Right, that's what
there
I
was certainly a decent amount of that in the original, but it was much more ham. Handed.
You know, am I going to watch it? No, because I'm not going to pay for these
things. Does
it
intrigue you? That was the first question. It's like, is it like, I would like that to see him on the ground.
I'm going
to
say this. Yes, because I think he's a terrific actor. I love Next Generation. I loved his character. And I just love that tone of Star Trek. And does it intrigue me? Definitely. And it's almost enough to make me pay for it just because I want to see him do it. That's how invested I would be in it. I am going to say this, though, for CBS in general. It's a pretty clever move. You know, everyone has to have a hook for their streaming
that's
service.
That's what they're trying to do is
and
get
going,
you
to, okay, let's grab all the
we'll
tech
get
dudes.
Some segment of people.
In the same way that Disney marketed to the Star
for sure.
Wars people.
Yeah, that's, that was
so
the
I'm
biggest
not
driver.
Fault that. I, you know.
Don't you think it has to roll off and into like regular CBS at some point? I mean, like, why would, like, if CBS is going to do this and it turns out to be a good show.
Oh, it'll turn up on TV.
Don't they want to, like, yes. Like, even if it's 2 years from now, be like, you know, now we're going to release this thing that was on the cable.
So that's the thing. I don't know, but I, you
I mean,
know, am I going to go and pay for the streaming service now? No, but definitely when someone says to me, ooh, it's now on, you know, the equivalent of Blu-ray, then I'm like, yeah, I'll put my money in my pocket for that. Because again, I like Patrick Stewart and I love the Picard character. And I have, you know, done a lot of reading on like IO9 and a few of these others. And I'm interested.
All right, done. Perfect timing. So speaking of Star Wars,
yep.
I had sent you a link. So I ended up at this link because I was, during the course of talking about the Mandalorian or researching on the Mandalorian, and, you know, spoiler alert, everybody, there's a baby Yoda on it.
Those movies are great.
But one
those
of the things
about movies are not. The last three movies are a mixed bag.
Yeah, but we're talking about the series Mandalorian. It's all about the Mandalorian.
Landing.
By the way, I could mention Clone Wars. Maybe I'll add that to our list.
Okay,
here.
Do it.
But the in any event. So
yes,
I was following up.
Very
I was following up on
we will link
on Yoda
okay.
Because there is, for people who don't know, there's no species name for you because all we had was Yoda. There was a brief appearance of a female of the same species in one of the prequels.
I did not know this,
but there's no
they're
other
Yoda
of these things. Yeah, nobody's ever said
they're not
so,
Yoda.
So when we got a baby Yoda into this thing, people were like, "Well, we're calling him baby Yoda because there's no species to attribute this to."
Can I ask you a quick question about that? Because when you said it to me, I hadn't made all these connections. So the baby Yoda, I mean, I'm presuming dramatically he will be related to Yoda.
No, well, people
but he
don't
might
know.
Not be,
he
right?
might be.
It
might
is possible
not be,
he's
right?
not.
He's definitely,
okay.
He's in the timeline, he's later. And he's of an age that could have been an offspring of Yoda's. He basically, like, if people kind of figure out this timeline, he would be the same age as Darth Vader.
There is a small part of me that cannot believe right now that I'm trying to figure out the evolutionary place of Yoda in animals in general. My mind is
so anyway, I'm following
right
various threads and there's in addition to obviously internet, there's a thing called Wookiepedia.
Okay.
Which is I think now owned by Disney and it's basically like a Wikipedia just for Star Wars. And one of the interesting things about it is that they separate out stuff that's considered canon, meaning
we've had
like
discussion
and other parts that are just
go back to our show in January
stuff.
where we went inside.
Somehow I'm sure you remember
you
the
sent
picture,
it to me, yes.
And I think it's because there's some sort of semblance. I can't remember how I got here, but in any event, there is a species and this is canon, by the way. I looked up there, and it seems to be canon. Called Zepho species.
And it's spelled the way I spell my name, with two Fs.
Yeah.
No P, no H.
So just to read from Wikipedia.
Hit me.
The Zepho, also known as the Zephonians,
yeah,
were an ancient and sentient species native to the planet Zepho.
Sentient.
Many Zepho.
I've got my own planet.
Could wield the force, which they referred to as
the, I can quote, wield the force.
Life wind. And those who did became known as sages.
Unfortunate.
Yeah, life wind.
Yes.
A little bit of life wind here.
I'm full of hot air.
Three of the esteemed sages.
Sage?
Aelram, well, that's if they became experts, and they called, in their society, they called them sages. They were buried in elaborate tombs. They have these big ears like Yoda, both on Zepho and Dathomir. Dathomir, I've heard of that planet before, I can't remember. The culture extended beyond their homeworld with elaborate temples and tombs built in Bogano, Antho, whatever.
Okay.
Though the Zepho originated as a peaceful culture, as over time they became more and more corrupt, falling to the dark side of the force.
Well, I'll be fair. I mean, I'm kind of a coward, but you can easily pay me off if you want. Exactly. So there you go. I'm corrupt.
Yeah. In the years before the Jedi Purge, I guess the Jedi Purge is probably when clones coming after him and all this. The Jedi Master Eno Cordova became fascinated by the near-extinct Zepho. In a Force vision, the Jedi Padawan somebody was spoken to by a Zepho claimed to be the leaning remnants. And that's it. That's the whole thing about him. That's what the whole movies, thing Wikipedia has.
What movies has my species named after me
None,
been in?
No movies.
No movies?
Yeah.
The hell is that?
Because there's
some second level character for some
stuff that's canon
Dweebo fan fiction comic strip book.
It's canon, like Fallen Order, which I think may be a video game.
Fallen Order does sound relatively legit.
They appear
in
Dark Temple 2, they appear as a statue. I don't know what these are. Dark Temple 3, they appear as a statue. Dark Temple 4, picture only. Dark Temple 5, indirect mention only.
What's Dark Temple?
I don't know.
Is that not a video game?
I don't know. Let me check. It's probably a
book. But again, I'm not in any of the movies. Because I'm not going to lie, when you showed me the picture of the Zepho,
yeah,
I looked at it and I thought, yeah, I've seen that hanging out in a bar in a marketplace in one of the movies. Do you know what I mean?
It looks like it's a comic book.
Okay. All right. So I'm in. All right. So I've
It's the third issue of this canon comic book series.
Okay.
Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order Dark Temple, which ties.
Well, you know, to link it back to our prior story when you asked me about my level of Trek fandom.
Oh, this is recent. It's published in late 2019, so they're a recent edition.
I got to tell you something. If this Zepho character was in any of the movies, I'd be all the way in as a Star Wars fan, because that would be my team.
Well, maybe he can make an appearance. I mean, we got all these series. You know, they said they postponed the Obi-Wan series.
Totally too late now.
But they're still doing it on Disney Plus.
I thought you said they postponed it indefinitely.
Postponed it, but they're still... No, not indefinitely. They just said it's going to come out later. I think they just...
Do they have a date for later?
I think they got tired.
Because if they don't have a date for later...
I think after the way this movie went, because they rushed everything. Everything they're doing is in a rush. And I think they said, let's not rush this one. Let's go ahead and take our time. Also, here's another
side
note.
Let me walk you through some
of the Baby Yoda. Apparently, it's just... I didn't... Oh,
too late.
Okay.
Too late.
So I got we got the Picard... Star Wars.
And you've been given just 5 minutes. Yeah, Nicholas Parsons, he's only give you 1 minute.
Well, talking about space.
Okay, let's go.
Space Force.
Space Force.
Yeah, this is the new sixth branch of the U.S. military.
Sixth?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of confusing, right? Like, so you've got...
Does Marines count as one?
Well, but that's still only four. Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines.
Coast Guard.
Coast Guard.
See, I don't think Marines should count as a separate one.
Well, they're a spinoff of Navy.
Yeah, so you're part of Navy. When Tom Cruise is Top Gun,
but I think Space Force is kind of like Marines are to Navy,
Space Force will be to the
Air Force.
Well, that makes sense, isn't it?
Yeah. But so they came out. First of all, it got funded, which was all part of a deal with Trump to get, I forget what the
Something
Democrats
to do with his
got
wall,
out
probably.
Of it. No, because it was something that the Democrats got out of it. Like, the Democrats said, okay, we need you to vote for this, and he wanted his Space Force so bad, he said, okay, yes, everybody go ahead and vote for this thing. And it was like I can't remember now what it was. I should have this information again. We were told it was going to be low research,
I'm going to ask
But the big news that was more recent was the uniform. Although you sent a link saying Space Force has officially started posting job openings.
Yes.
And this is on the Federal News Network,
which is
like the local news thing for the federal government.
If you want a job for Space Force, they're taking basically middle managers and project managers.
Gov, yep. And you know, you can come up with 39 jobs listed so far. Nine of listings, GS-15, which is, you know, like, so are higher. There's $143,000 salary type jobs.
How much?
143,000 GS15, which gets you 143,000 torque.
Yeah, and if you get posted to Jupiter, that's going to be like being a gazillionaire. There ain't going to be anything up there.
Yeah, there's like HR special. I think this is the part where they're hiring in order to hire other people, kind of thing. You know, like to make a plan here.
A job's a job, man. I'm a middle manager in real life. Yeah. I could run some satellite somewhere.
It's only the first blurb. All the rest of the blurbs are something else. Well, the other thing that had been in the news was about the uniforms. And, you know, so they came out with their uniform, and it's basically army camouflage, which, of course, Twitterverse and the social media had a field day, like, how is camouflage when you're in space?
You should either, you should just be wear wearing black.
You know?
Yes. I mean, I'm sorry. Yes. And people aren't being facetious when it's, you don't see Navy dudes walking around in camouflage. They wear blue or white.
Yeah, and apparently, like, it has a subtle difference in, like, the name tag is a navy blue or a dark blue. That's maybe that's supposed to be, like, space. Whereas, like, Army's is black and Air Force's is, like, a brown.
They also made a lot.
Air Force is apparently using this.
Apparently, the president tweeted the new logo, and the logo, everyone immediately started ripping.
Did we reset the clock, by the way?
Yes, we did. Okay, good. New logo, the Space Force logo, looks suspiciously like the Star Trek inverted triangle logo.
So is it this thing
logo
that's showing on the shoulder? Is that the logo they're talking
no,
about?
No, he tweeted it's some logo, okay, like the official badge of Space Force, and it looked like an arrowhead. But, of course, Trekkies out there know that that's the sign of the Federation.
Oh, so like maybe...
So people are like, you just ripped off Star Trek?
Yeah.
Which, to be fair,
well, listen,
if
you know,
you're gonna, I mean, those people.
Just think, the Star Wars missile defense was named after Star Wars, and it stuck, right? Like, people still talked about the Star Wars missile defense.
Again, I've said this on many different occasions when we've talked about aliens, but at the end of the day, everyone on Star Trek, well, they've got experience, so why not rip them off?
You know, I was.
They've been closer to outer space than any of us.
I was talking to a friend recently who was having trouble with her back. And we were talking about how, like, it's just all evidence of being aliens because we weren't supposed to walk up.
Which, right. I've said that. I stayed up late last night watching Ancient Aliens Declassified. It's a new series. I was watching that. It was the same dude's on banging on about how Egyptians came from outer space. Basically, whenever you watch any of these Ancient Alien shows, it ends up being, the pyramids. Something to do with the pyramids. And again, I've taken that position. Can I also shout out another science fiction show?
Well, this is, okay.
A science fiction show from, if you ever get a chance, well, I don't know if I should recommend this. Back in the 70s, the BBC, who we have already mentioned, did a BBC science fiction show called Blake's Seven, which was about these dudes, sort of like a Magnificent Seven of space. And the logo of the Federation in that was also a triangle, but it was on its side. So it looked like a rocket ship going along. But in that show, Federation were bad.
Oh, okay.
That's, and Blake was rebelling against the Federation.
Thought you were going to talk about Lost in Space, because that's on Netflix. Yeah, Lost in Space, a reboot of Netflix.
Who's in that? Is there anyone
Parker
famous
Posey's
in that?
Parker Posey's the famous person. Who's
she's in it.
And she plays the, like, who was the bad person in the original? Was a guy,
Doc, what's his name? Yeah, the professor.
Yeah.
Professor
Bad Guy.
It
was a doctor or something or other.
But he wasn't really bad.
Anyway, she's playing that doctor character as a bad person, but in fact is an imposter of the doctor.
I'm so glad the time went off, because I was going to say that I have a secret Parker Posey thing and sat through Dazed and Confused and all that the other night, because I have a secret. I'm one of the many people with a secret Parker Posey thing.
Yeah, well, that Dazed and Confused is high point Parker Posey.
That's off topic. Let's go. Next topic. Secret Parker Posey.
Let's talk about Car Show, because I don't have a segue for this one.
Doesn't need to be.
But, you know, as people know who have listened before, we've talk a lot about cars generally.
We like cars,
we had an episode where we did live bits from the car show.
Go back to 2013, look in our archives, I think from January. We walked around with a
microphone.
We
walked around doing little clips, and then we cut them in and had discussions around things.
Yes.
And one of our main themes at the time was about the fact that, you know, if you killed somebody, could you fit the body into the back of the car?
Yes, that was our thing.
And I'll talk more about our respective going to the car show here in a second. But when I went to the car show last week, there was literally somebody, like, the first 5 minutes I was there, making jokes with their friends about people being fit in the trunk. Now, I don't think it was supposed to be dead people, but it was about, like, how do you fit people into, you know, in other words, I think they were maybe like, can you smuggle somebody into something by putting them in trunk or whatever it was. I was like, hey, that's an Atlantic Voice bit.
There's an Atlantic Voice bit. It's a Quentin Tarantino bit, but you know the best movie about people in the trunk is Repo Man, talking about aliens. Have you ever seen Repo Man with Emilio Estevez?
Sure, but there's no people in the trunk.
that dude is driving around in the Plymouth because it's got aliens, dead or dying aliens in the trunk, like from Roswell. And everyone's trying to get the Plymouth, whatever one it is, Plymouth Dart or whatever it is.
I mean, remember? It's been a long time since I saw it. I remember you open glowing. The trunk. And
yeah,
look,
and there's little alien bodies in the back.
I don't remember disclosing what it was back there.
Well, obviously.
Did you fill that in yourself?
Guy, that's always my assumption. I watch that movie every time it comes on.
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, I always think of it like, you know,
Emilio Estevez, Dennis Hopper, all kinds of other dudes from the 80s that you go, yeah, I've seen that guy in something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that guy was in Escape from New York as well. Yeah.
In order to get some real news in this. So the most interesting
thing. I saw that guy on Family Ties.
I'm sorry.
But he's got alien DNA. He's got like the bodies of an alien in the trunk. That's why the car is glowing and radioactive. That's why the government are trying to get him. But of course, Emilio Estevez is just trying to repo the car and get it before the two Latino dudes who are also repo men and the black repo man and all this kind of stuff.
Okay. They remade that and I didn't watch that either.
No, they was called Repo Man, but it had nothing to do with like cars.
Is this the one where they like take your organs or something?
Yeah,
like that,
it was
right?
Jude Law and someone else, and it had absolutely nothing to do with the Emilio Estevez movie, and nor should it, because that Emilio Estevez movie is a classic. And it was produced by what's his name from The Monkees? Michael, oh, I've forgotten his name now. Oh, I can see his face. It's going to drive me nuts now. The monkey who got in and started a film production company. Oh, sorry. Nesmith. Well, so Michael Nesmith.
Okay.
That's how good.
We're going separate. We're not going this. I went with another set of people because they had gotten us tickets and so went with the other member of the household. And the biggest news there, though, was that.
Didn't see many cars there.
There was,
apparently,
there
what
was
I've been
no
told.
BMW, no Mercedes, Audi, no Porsche.
No Germans. It's got to be something to do with Brexit.
No, Volkswagens were there. Then there's a big sign saying, you know, due to circumstance beyond our control, these aren't here. I've not found out. Now it was beyond. I'm looking
the
this
circumstances
up live.
Beyond our control is the president
is
being
BMW
very hostile
there?
About Europe. Yes.
Okay. Because
they don't let you get in, but
wasn't.
It was always there. Audi's, because I would check these. I remember these things based on the level of what do they bring and what can you do with them. Audi used to bring everything and you could get in and out of them. BMW wouldn't bring a lot, and the doors were locked.
Yeah, of course, we definitely saw
them. And then Mercedes was somewhere in between. You get into some of them you couldn't get into.
Yeah.
So the Germans all ran the gamut. Volkswagen, no one cared. They'd give you one if they could, because when we used to go there in trouble for the whole Dieselgate thing.
So you haven't gone yet. I will tell you that the most interesting car there is the Ford Mustang Mach-E, which is a SUV using the Mustang badging. Electric.
Oh, I thought it was an electric Mustang. It's an SUV?
Yeah. Like kind of like a very low slung SUV. It's very much like a Porsche Panamera kind of thing. Or no, not a Panamera, but the
No, I know the one you're talking about. Like, yeah, the four door.
It's pretty good looking. And
but can't it be called something else? Like cart horse?
Well,
or
they're just trying
like
to get I mean the thing is I think
they're just getting
traction off of the name. And it's fast. I mean
electric. Is it fully electric?
Yeah.
Really?
Plug-in whole thing, and they've got a GT version that'll be coming out. I mean, this sucker's going to be a big deal. In fact, the other member of the household was talking about, like, oh, I'd like to get that. And I was like, first of all, you they're doing like Tesla right now where you can put a deposit and you can order it without ever driving it. And I was like, we're not buying a car that nobody's ever even sat in.
No, I think that's fair enough.
Yeah. So that covers
and to
car
be fair,
show.
At least Ford will deliver as Tesla don't deliver, do they?
Now, speaking of travel, next weekend, the other member of the household and I are going to Jamaica for a wedding.
Oh.
Never been. Have you ever been?
I have not.
So it's like one of these sandals resorts. I didn't realize it's like
Montego Bay. Isn't that in Jamaica?
It is. Yes.
All right, there you go.
There are like six different.
Kingston is the capital.
Six
of
different
Jamaica.
Sandals resorts in Jamaica.
Oh, really?
And I was like,
are you sure you've checked in at the right one?
Well, the other member of the household has that covered. Okay. But I did find out today that it was not the one that I thought it was because I said. At some point, I said, are we
sure
at the Montego
the
Bay one? Oh, yeah, we are. And so, well, I mean, they're not totally the same. And so I did go look things up.
Say things.
Like, but they got some interesting stuff. Like, we're staying in, and it sounds like it's super fancy, but I think because it's in Jamaica, it's not that fancy. Like, there's like three or four couples in this sort of private set of villa, like linked up villa with your own pool and butler service.
Oh, wow.
And like, so another one I saw, which is not at this place, the pool goes up to your back Like, in other words, your room opens up into the pool.
Oh, no, I've seen.
Like, you know, like, literally, like, yeah. You can swim up right onto your back deck at these rooms. I don't know if that's what we got, but in any event, so it'll be interesting. But really, I've never done that before. We'll see what it's like. The travel element is what.
How many days are you going?
We're going on Friday. We'll be there by, like, 1 in the afternoon on Friday, and we leave on Monday at, like, 2 or 3 in the afternoon.
Nights. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's, like, 3 nights, but. Saturday, Sunday. Yeah, 3 nights. But, like, really 4 days because we leave pretty late and get there pretty early. But to get there from here, the only airline that flies direct is Spirit out of BWI, which is a solid hour and change from here depending upon your traffic situation. Okay. But Spirit, of course, is one of these low-cost airlines.
Oh, yeah.
Where the leading – like, when you go to book it, you're like, oh, my – it's, like, nearly free to go there. But that is –
yeah.
No choice of seat, no bags at all. You can't even carry a bag on without paying more.
Exactly.
And so there's all these add-ons and things. But even so, we did, like, you can do, like, a package of add-ons. And in fact, so that's, I was like, well, I know we're going to have things. And then we end up with, like, you know, we end up, like, premium. Once you add things, and I don't know what this is. Like, we're going to be in an exit row that has a whole other empty row in front of it. In other words, so, like, you'll be stretch out. I mean, it's not going to – the seats don't recline, by the way, on Spirit.
Oh, God. What kind of plane is it? A 737?
Yeah, something like that. No, it's an A321 or something like that.
Oh, you know, which is the Airbus version of.
So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what it's like. And a bunch of people have said bad things. And then other people have told me, listen, you know, if you
what
get
the extra
pieces. What
have they
said
bad about it?
Well, it's tight. It's cheap. It's, you know, like everything feels a little. I think the big problem is its colors are yellow and black. And it just doesn't feel like an airline color.
No. You know? I still kind of feel, though, wouldn't it be easier for them just to name a price? Surely it's I understand that is the model where you go, yeah, you can go to Jamaica for $3 and then, oh, to check your bag is $999. But surely low-cost airlines are trying to cut costs. And so you need to – if you want to hire, like, the lowest, like, capable, like, check-in staff or those sort of people – don't give them too much to do.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, this.
Sorry,
the economics of price segmentation are beyond the 5 minutes that we have here. But it's all really designed so that you can sell the maximum number of seats. And, you know, the people who want to spend more will spend more. Like, the luggage is kind of weird because everybody has luggage at some degree, right? So nobody's going to go to Jamaica empty-handed.
I understand.
So that seems like a cheat. Like, basically, you should let at least people carry on a bag.
Well, here's the interesting. I remember flying by JetBlue once. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, when the dude walked up and down with the chips, you had to pay for them, but you got a free little half bottle of water. But JetBlue had big seats, very comfortable. Yeah, you had to pay for your TV. But in the end of the day, though, it was comfortable to sit in. And I find it interesting that their model is, A, pack you in there, and two, jam you up for all the little things. But I guess that's low-cost airlines for you.
Yeah, so we'll see. But it's interesting. There's nothing from D.C. proper that goes directly there. So you have to go up there. And you know, you could fly from here on things. It's not terribly expensive. Actually, Southwest also flies direct from BWI. So you can go to Baltimore to Jamaica, no problem. The Southwest flights were considerably more expensive.
Oh, they were?
Yeah, yeah. For whatever reason, I guess it's just not attractive enough.
It'll be interesting to see what your I've forgotten the word I'm looking for now. What your sort of final
one of the nice things? So, like, this extra package.
Your verdict.
Here's one nice thing. The package automatically included the ability to change your flight once for free.
Ooh.
And so we actually did that because the other member of the household has a schedule that's difficult and we had to change flight.
That is a big deal.
Yep.
Next topic.
Plowing
through.
Yeah, the last one I have on my list, I can't think of who forgot it, was about, there was recently a little news clip talking about how per capita, meaning per person in the United States, which I think, I don't know if it's adults or whatever, but let's assume it's everybody, consumption of alcohol from all types of beverage, in other words, they sort of just quantify the amount of alcohol you're taking in, is now just recently passed what it was before Prohibition.
Not so, during Prohibition.
Before.
Like, no, and I'm not being facetious when I say it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. During Prohibition, first of all, they don't have very good data during Prohibition because, of course, you didn't, like,
One was tracking the amount of illegal alcohol you drank.
Right, and you can gather pretty decent data even back then because it was all taxed, right? So you had taxed out of how much alcohol was being sold, and you could say, okay, you know, this stuff's 30 proof, this is wine, whatever it is. So, like, when you look currently...
No one can ever say prohibition to me without me hearing Sean Connery going, what are you prepared to do?
Right.
To Kevin Costner.
I don't have the 2019 figure because I wanted to get something that had a bunch of different year figures, but nowadays it's basically at 2.5 gallons of alcohol per person over the course of a year.
2.5 gallons.
Right, which isn't like a ton, but again, I think it's figured out if you have liquor, it's a shot of liquor has the same amount of alcohol as a beer. So in other words, they're not really quantifying the amount of alcoholic beverages you had. They're having
the amount of alcohol. That's okay. Alcohol. So if you distilled it all out. So when you look at
2.5 gallons, it's not that much. And like in 1916 to 1919, it was about just about, well, this says two. Up through 1905, it was 2.39. So all this sounds as if we're drinking more than we ever have, which isn't really true because in 1980s it was higher, and there are a bunch of times in history it's been higher.
Can I say that I'm actually surprised that people drank. I don't have an opinion on how much alcohol is drunk now. I'm surprised that much alcohol was drank back then, because I would have presumed that alcohol was expensive. Plus.
Well, but that people drank a lot of bad alcohol.
Yeah, no, okay, I'll give you that. But also the notion of, I mean, I've always thought that wine being, to link us back to Brexit. You know, Europe have a very different relationship with wine. Table wine, you have it with dinner. But I've always felt I'm of a generation where wine was not quite like champagne, but it was we're having wine with dinner. And so what I'm saying is I only feel in the past 10, 15, 20 years that the whole like wine, hey, affordable wine, hey, what do they have for, you know, what's $2 chuck at Trader Joe's wine or what have you. But I'm surprised that people were able to drink that much alcohol just back then. Forget prohibition. I'm just talking about back then.
Yeah, I the story is always that you didn't have a lot of water for sure. You know, people drink so much water now, like every day, but you didn't have
that amount of potable water.
But I'm trying to find the news bit to say exactly what the number is now. But it did make me wonder, okay, what's behind this, right? And one thing they were talking about is, well, you know, we think of prohibition and temperance and this effort to like ban alcohol, but even after that, there was a segment of the population that regarded, there's always a segment that says alcohol is bad, but there's no movement in the United States now to not have alcohol at all.
Right. Okay.
Like those forces have lost. Through the 40s, 50s, 60s, you would have had some segment of people who just said, oh, no.
Fanatics.
We should not have alcohol at all in the world, and it's horrible for everybody kind of thing.
In fact, now you can have like an alcohol plus Second Amendment thing where you're, hey, You should be able to carry a gun and drink at the same time.
Right. And I wondered whether there's two things that I've noticed in the past 10 years that have picked up. One is the advent of the brunch drinking and daytime drinking by some folks. And I just don't think that was a thing. Like, I don't ever remember the parents or anybody having drinks at breakfast with things, whereas now it's not unusual for people to have the Bloody Mary and all that stuff. Not that those didn't exist before.
All the strands of our show are tying together, and if the clicker goes off because this is the last topic, we will annoy it. We will ignore it. I mean, I grew up in a time where, and in a country where, you know, you had your lunch hour, and in England, you went to the pub, and people drank a pint or two of beer or a gin and tonic at lunchtime. I mean, you know, that whole... obviously this predates me, but, you know, I remember when Mad Men was on TV and everyone was like, yeah, you know, people kept alcohol in their office and offered people a drink when they came in. So, yeah, I would perhaps challenge the assertion that this has grown. I think it's one of those things that's sort of always been there. Do you know what I mean? Like I said, I came from a culture where people drank at lunchtime.
Yeah, well, I remember when we first came out of school, I had a couple of friends who went to work at the government, and they give you all the policies, and we always got a big kick out of the fact that there was a rule for working at the federal government that you couldn't have more than 2 drinks at lunch.
Oh, really?
And I don't, you know, maybe that rule still exists, but like the notion of like doing
not
any
in the White House,
2 drinks,
because no one can tweet sober.
So, but the other thing I wondered might be a factor in this, and look, I'm looking at a grid that kind of compares the different types of alcohol, which we can mention in a second, but was the strength of beer, which is, you know, like for years and years, all anybody had was, I don't mean just light beers, but lagers that would be 3% alcohol or 4% alcohol, right? Like, so 3.2 beer is a reduced one. So let's say 4% alcohol. But now, like so many people who are drinking interesting beers, now they tend not to have 12 of them, you know, but the alcohol levels can be up to 6, 9, 10% alcohol.
Yeah,
so if you're doing the count of alcohol based on these things, this is a little bit different. And everything's a pint, right? Remember when having a pint of beer was rare? Like you'd go get a beer somewhere and it was like a 12-ounce glass. I remember you'd have like these stem glasses or small stem little like holder, you know, it held 12 ounces of beer, and now like nothing's not in a pint or more.
Well, it's interesting.
But you go to these places where like, oh, would you like the 16-ounce beer or the 24-ounce beer? Getting 24 ounces of beer at a restaurant is just weird.
It is weird, and also, but it's actually the move to make.
I mean, even if you have 24 ounces, it's just the notion of a serving of beer that's that big is just odd.
What's interesting though, to your point about alcohol content. You know, one of the reasons one could drink a couple of pints at lunchtime in England was the fact that, you know, if you're savvy about what you ordered back in the day, most bitters are only 3 to 3.5%. So you can plow back a pint or two and, you know, then again, the dude who's coming and going, no, I'm not having a beer, give me a gin and tonic. If he's keeping up with you, he's going all the way in.
Yeah, yeah.
And heaven forbid when he's back on the typewriter in the afternoon.
Yeah, to bring this all full circle, one of the things I've been thinking about, because – well, I haven't been to Jamaica or any. We went to Aruba once years ago, and
where's Aruba?
It's down by.
I don't know where any of these places are. I just think when people name these different resorts, I just think it's all sort of Mexico and in the Gulf of Mexico,
the South American country that's known for its steak,
Argentina.
Yeah, so it's
in Argentina.
It's down like off the shore in a weird way.
Really? I thought it was in the Caribbean. I was one of these places.
No, that's why this is not making
Aruba,
it's not holding
Cuba.
Together now. In any event, we were having like these great steaks. But the first thing I did, like, you know, was a lot of years ago, I'll get a beer. Well, getting a beer at the beach is just like the worst because you can't get through it before it's just warm. And there's a reason that they make these like, you know, beach cocktails that have ice cubes in them, you know, because then the ice cubes keep it cold at least for 20 minutes, you know. So I was thinking about going down there and like what drinks, you know, we'll be having and, you know, when we show up at 1:30, you know, what are they going to hand us? And I'm thinking gin and tonic's the way to go.
Are you excited to go to Sandals?
Yeah, I want to find out about it. It's going to be interesting because my wife knows these people very well.
Okay.
But I don't know them all very well. I'm sorry, the other member of the household. I don't want to give anything away. But the other member of the household knows them very well. I don't, and we're all going to have to be in a pool in our swimsuits together.
Oh, I'm going to ask you one question, and I don't mean to sound like a moron when I say this. How hot is it there this time of year?
So it is literally every day we're there, and it appears to be all the days.
I don't know.
Low of 73-ish.
Okay.
High of 85. Every single day for like 2 weeks, that's the forecast.
Okay, so it's nice then.
Yeah. It says humid.
Ooh, okay.
Now, I do remember when I was in Aruba, Aruba's like on this very windy area, so even though it was hot, it was just air was blowing all the time. So I don't know what Jamaica's like relative to this.
All right, so Dreadlock Holiday, which I think is a song. Is that? Who's that?
You know, I cut my hair short so I can, because I don't really have bunch of hair, but now he's short this way, so I can just rub Substance Creed all over my head. Like, I don't even have to worry about like it's gonna mess up my hair because it's all off basically.
Wear a hat.
I am gonna wear a hat. I'm gonna wear my cool Tilly hat.
This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeff.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeff on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.